Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words with Dan Suriff, whose name I was about to butcher until he said it about 2 seconds ago. So props to Dan. It is not Suriff, it's Suriff. And I'm sure I'm not the first, nor will I be the last to destroy that. Waldman is a very easy name to phonetically say, and I think Fishkin probably is too. So sorry, dude. So for the next few weeks on Waldman's Words, we've got a bunch of great guests. And in fact, of the next 4 weeks, three of them are other managers. So that's pretty sweet. We've been focusing, as you know, on the behind-the-scenes people in 2017. I think it's been really fruitful. So next week, we've got Blake Cordero, who has way too many jobs. He works for So What. In addition, he works for the Catalyst Publicity Group, and he is an artist manager for this band Nominee, who I am a big fan of. I think that the pop punk scene is really oversaturated, but this band definitely sticks out. So props to Blake. I'm really excited to talk to him about that. The following week, we've got Morgan Carney, who's another hyphen. He is the talent buyer for Rockettown in Nashville, Tennessee, which is a really cool venue. And he manages a band called Woven in Hiatus on In Vogue Records and Forever at Last on Victory Records. So we're going to talk about Hush Puppies in Tennessee and working at a Christian music venue. As you could tell by Waldman's words, I'm not sure if I fit in at a Christian music venue, but, you know, I mean, I do like Under Oath, so stop me. JD from the band Valencia, JD Perry, and Sean Dorsey, who is not in Valencia but is a good buddy, they own a label, an indie label in Philadelphia called No Hope Records, not to be confused with No Hope, the Color Morale album. And it's just really, really, really diverse collection of bands on the label. And they just put out a compilation where 100%, not 99%, not 10%, 100% of the proceeds go to the ACLU, which I'm sure that if you've been on Facebook or Twitter, you've read a lot about the ACLU. And I'm all for it. I'm for if anyone will pay for music that goes directly to helping a genuinely good cause. So props to them for doing something good with the music community, because sometimes people are just trash talking and they're literally putting their money where their mouth is. And then, I don't know if Dan knows this, but Chris Bianchi, who is another person at Mercenary, the company that Dan, I'm going to read this, is the vice president of artist management and digital strategy. Yes! So I got that right. I guess Google is a great website. And Chris works for Mercenary in addition to starting his own label called Legend, in addition to having his own management company, in addition to being a former teenage screamer. So he has done a lot too. He, I guess out of the four people I mentioned, he is the biggest hyphen. So I'm just really happy that he's going to be on the show. So I guess this week is sponsored by Mercenary. So thank you guys so much, and Blasco, I hear good things. So anyway, I'm just so stoked to have Dan on the show. We're going to start just after this commercial break. But as you know, every single Tuesday night at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. I don't know why I just moved my hand. You can't see me. But at 8 p.m. Eastern time, Waldman's Words is on the air. Thank you. Thank you. Stick around. We are back with Waldman's Words. Thank you guys for listening to those commercials. Those commercials pay for this show. So we've got Dan, biggest Papa Roach fan I've ever met my entire life. Fuck the Offspring. It's all about Papa Roach. So maybe, I don't know. I am really into Infest as a record front to back. And the reason why I heard this, and you might be like, dude, that's not true. Papa Roach put out some music before they were signed to DreamWorks at the time. And bands would hand out cassettes with two songs on them, like one on each side. And I heard that Papa Roach just flooded the Sunset Strip. And so week one, Infest sold 10,000 copies because of that strategy. That's what I heard.
Wow, that's super impressive.
Yeah.
I think when that album came out, though, I was maybe 13, 14 years old, a little too young to be hanging out on Sunset Strip.
When that album, yeah, you're a tad younger than me. That album came out, I believe, in either 99 or 2000, 100%, because I think it was like my freshman year of college. So I was old enough to hang out at the Sunset Strip, but not old enough to go to the bars. But anyway, Papa Roach, greatest metal band of all time.
You know what? Most underrated, most underrated mainstream metal band that you can think of. You know, over here in LA, we don't have an active rock station. LA residents like me, we don't quite know how big and popular that band is. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I go see them in, you know, Ohio or Colorado or something, and they're selling out amphitheaters. They're playing for 5,000 to 10,000 people.
Here they play in Riverside. They don't play in LA.
Right.
You know what band is? I was in a band that toured a lot in the mid-2000s, like 2005, 2006. Do you know what band got name-checked to me more than any other band? Simple Plan.
Wow.
You don't realize how big Simple Plan is until you leave the coasty areas. You know, it's just, I mean, we're so cool over here, but just like in other areas, those bands, and Breaking Benjamin is huge.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Huge.
Well, Breaking Benjamin just had like the number one album in the country.
It's insane. And I think that they are actually co-managed by Maroon 5's manager.
Yes.
Which is, you don't think that those two worlds intersect. Okay, anyway, I digress. We've got Dan Suriff, whose name I did not butcher because he told me how to say it just before we got on the show. So I believe we met on Facebook, correct?
Yeah, correct.
And what's funny is when I asked him if he wanted a coffee today, brought to you by Steampunk, I actually Facebook messaged him that. Like we haven't graduated to the phone just yet. So hopefully maybe after this show we can maybe even tweet or text. That's going to be a big thing. So has Facebook been an interesting way for you to connect with other managers? Like how do you navigate this landscape? We're going to kind of go in kind of a non-chronological order for a little bit.
All right. I mean, you know, so social media as a whole has been just a great tool for me meeting people. You know, with professionally, the metal industry and just music in general, it's really a small place. You know, there's maybe about 100 total people in the metal music industry, so you meet them pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. Facebook has been great for me with meeting people outside of metal music. Mm-hmm. You know, most of my friends they're in finance, they're in marketing, tech, and that's how I meet them is through social media, mm-hmm. a lot of Facebook, a lot of just following somebody on Instagram and they follow you back.
You know, I manage a metal band called Candy Hearts, right? They're extreme metal, so I get it. I'm surprised we didn't meet outside of Facebook.
No, but you know how it goes. It's a very small scene, but yeah, you know, you get
a loyal scene.
Very loyal.
Fiercely.
Yes. So, you know, you do find the occasional gems on social media, but as a whole within the metal music industry, everyone kind of knows each other after a few years. Mm-hmm. If we hadn't met on Facebook, we would have met at a show. Like, we would have met at It's Not
Offspring.
Dead Fest.
Well, you know, actually, my show, Waldman's Words, is going to be the Adobe help for that show.
That's why I bring it up, and I think that's how we first broed down. I was like, oh, this is like a punk rock dude. I'm a punk rock dude. We should be friends.
That's what I grew up on, man. I mean, I was my gateway drug into punk. And you, look at this. Look at number two on my list.
Oh my God. Oh, it's about to get dorky.
Oh, no. It's not about to get dorky. I'm just going to open the dork flood waves further. I was first introduced to, I guess, the punk world by a kid showing me Dookie. And then I went to, I believe, a Sam Goody at Roosevelt Field Mall in Long Island and picked up Punk-O-Rama just because it said punk.
Wait, which Punk-O-Rama?
One.
Oh, that's old. Punk-O-Rama 2 is one of the best compilations ever made.
Yeah, well, Punk-O-Rama 2 is amazing. It's got Coffee Mug on it.
Yes. Right?
And it's got some rare B-side of No Effects, but Punk-O-Rama 1, I agree with you. I don't think it's as good, but I think it's a better gateway drug one because it showed me Jennifer Lost the War.
Oh,
It showed me No Effects, Don't Call Me White. It showed me, and I would argue that this is one of the top five punk rock songs ever, Do What You Want by Bad Religion.
Oh, amazing.
So, wait, pound it.
Yes.
So it showed me that stuff. So that's actually what got me into this stuff. And I don't care if I sound like a poser. I bought it just because it said punk and Offspring on it.
Yeah, Punk-O-Rama, the first one was awesome. And you know what? People forget. It had Wayne Kramer from MC5 on it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, growing
Kick
up.
Kick out the jams, motherfucker.
Yeah. As a kid, I was like, who's this old guy with you know.
Old
like,
bald dude.
Yeah, who's this old bald dude hanging out with, like, Rancid and Bad Religion? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, as an adult, I was like, oh, damn. This guy's a really important dude.
And it had Pennywise, which, I mean, I know that a lot of people give them shit for making the same album over and over, but fuck you. They're awesome.
Oh, they're amazing. But you know what? That was Pennywise before they got big. That was before About Time.
That was pre-Suicide.
Yeah.
Well, wasn't that About Time? 94.
No, the first one didn't have anything from About Time.
Oh, it didn't have it, but it was coming out around then.
Yeah, yeah. Punk-Rama 2 was the first compilation to have songs from
Perfect
About Time.
People.
Yes.
Yes.
Classic.
Yeah, no, I really, really, About Time is still my favorite. And what's crazy is all these bands were doing these 20-year anniversary tours, and I think that Pennywise didn't do a tour with it, but I think they played the Palladium where they played a different album each night.
And sadly, I missed it. One of my all-time favorite bands playing one of my all-time favorite albums.
Were you at Summer Nationals?
Oh, yeah, of course.
In San Diego? Me too.
See, I did San Diego, and then I went to the Orange County show. Like, I'm not going to miss that.
That was so cool. And I was just at the Sabroso Chula Vista Fest when a lot of people – what was that weekend? It was the It's Not Dead Festival. No, not It's Not Dead. Sorry. The We Were Young one. The new one that was in was at the Observatory, which Morrissey, AFI played, and every single band from 2002 played. And obviously I was into that, but I really wanted to see Unwritten Law, Sum 41, and Offspring. And during the Offspring set, and then we're actually going to get to your career, but during the Offspring set, I saw three fights. Like, fight.
That's not even a violent band. What are they so angry about?
It was a beer and taco fest. It was a 21 and up show when you have alcohol-free, like, little samples of it going around all day in Orange County. Stuff is bound to happen.
Was it during Bad Habit, at least?
it was during Why Don't You Get a Job? No, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what it was during, but
That's something you wouldn't expect, but maybe I'm glad I sat that one out.
You might have been one of the victims, and I actually heard homophobia, like, from people. I know, it's just so weird because, like, the Offspring, like, yeah, of course, no matter when a band gets big, like Nirvana, I remember. When Incesticide came out, they wrote in the liner notes, like, if you are homophobic or if you are racist or whatever, like, we don't want you as a fan. Get the fuck out. Because no matter what, when a band gets big, you're going to get that. But I don't see the Offspring as a bro band. Like, I could definitely see, like, a lot of, like, obviously, we don't need to get specific, but there's a lot of bands, you know, that are coming out of the scene on Rise that people would be like, yeah, that's a little bit more tough guy. And Offspring's not tough guy. So.
No, I think they would be much more with, like, Nirvana, that they don't want fights. They don't want that craziness at their shows.
They're goofy.
Yeah, no, they're – like, I follow Noodles on Twitter. He seems like the coolest guy.
You've never met him?
I have met him. I just didn't want to come in with the name drop.
No, I mean, whatever. I mean, it'd be one thing if you were like, I met him once, and he smiled. He was so nice. I love when I see that on social media. Like, when a band dude shows his dick, of course, you know, which happens a lot. They're like, I met him. He was so nice. It's like, you paid money to see this guy perform, and he took a picture with you. Like, you don't know. Anyway. All right. So, music growing up. So, what's funny is number 7 on this sheet is The Offspring. And during the pre-break, I was talking to Dan about how much I love Conspiracy of One. But what other music were you exposed to besides The Offspring? Or for the next 11 minutes, we could just talk about The Offspring.
Well, we could do both.
Okay.
They're a little intertwined. Offspring's been my first favorite band. And, you know, 20 years later, I'm still listening to them. Back in the Smash days, my best friend's older sister came to us and said, hey, you have to listen to this song. It's very vulgar, and you're not supposed to hear it, but it rules.
So in 94, how old are you now?
I'm 32, and this was in 1995.
Wow. Okay.
Yes. So she played Bad Habit for us. And, you know, I'd never heard that much cussing in a song.
You weren't listening to Ice Cube at the time?
No, I think I was listening to, like, Coolio.
MC Hammer. MC Hammer, Vanilla Ice.
Yeah, no, I was listening to whatever my older brother listened to, which just happened to be mainstream rap, but watered down mainstream rap. But anyways, I heard Bad Habit, and that just opened up the floodgates. Like, that was the coolest thing I'd ever heard.
It's kind of like a song version of the Michael Douglas movie Falling Down. I just thought about that, but I don't know. Have you seen that movie? Otherwise, I'm going to sound like a nut.
I have. It's been a long time, but I appreciate him going crazy.
He goes ham.
So, yeah, you know, that kind of opened the doorway for me to get into bands like Nirvana and Metallica. and eventually, you know, punk rock bands. And that's where my heart has been for decades now.
And now you manage the biggest punk rock band in the world, Black Veil Brides. So, you know, I mean, I meet a lot of people in this industry, as do you, and even people who manage Coachella bands, they grew up on the punk rock. I mean, it's kind of the F the man. It's kind of, it's where I guess a lot of people separate from the parents, unless your parents are way cooler than my parents were. Like, my parents weren't listening to The Clash or the Sex Pistols with a safety pin in their nose. You know, they were listening to Woodstock stuff. And so, I don't know. I feel like a lot of people of our generation, because I'm only a few years older than you, it's what they really identified with, and that's kind of how they separated from other people. I don't know. Do you agree?
Oh, totally. But my buddy actually brought up a good point online. We were talking about millennials.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
And so he said, you're much more likely to hate punk rock if your parents grew up punk. Or if your parents were punks. So, you know, maybe if your parents did have the blue hair and the safety pin nose ring,
you would have been like Michael J. Fox on Family Ties.
Yes. Wow. That's digging deep. But yes, you know, I would probably think
we
that
dig deep on Waldman's words.
I would think that it's super lame. And I think there's like a Slayer meme with Tom Araya and his daughter.
Oh, God. He seems like such a fuck.
But all I'm saying is that meme is pretty accurate in that you could be the singer of Slayer and your teenage daughter will still think you're lame.
And he's actually a vocal Trump supporter too. So that's what I just thought of. But anyway, we get a little bit political here, but whatever. You believe what you want, just don't be a dick. But yeah, I mean, I bet maybe if my parents were listening to like the Buzzcocks, like I would have been like, no, man, Sheryl Crow all the way. Like maybe that's what would have happened. I mean, I get it. People just want to deviate, and I guess really liberal parents would have really conservative people. And I'm just so worried about raising kids. Like, I'm really scared.
Well, see, if I ever have kids, I think I'm just going to make them, like, listen to Dead Kennedys and The Clash. So they grow up to be, like, straight-A students and cheerleaders and totally normal.
Perfect.
And don't have to deal with, like, the bullshit I had to deal with growing up.
I'm going
to
make them listen to Gigi Allen. I'm going to just
that will traumatize them.
That will traumatize them and then cause them to become politicians. So yeah, so you listen to music growing up. Are you a musician yourself?
No, I've never had any, like,
that's good.
Artistic, creative talent. That's why I'm on the other
side.
Well,
your ears are the talent. I mean, you have taste, and I'm sorry, I'm not kissing your ass, but that's a talent. There's a lot of people that, obviously in this industry, you have to be, I guess, adept in recognizing what could sell and what could do well. So that's a talent. But yeah, I mean, guitar lessons, actually, that's how I used to earn the majority of my living. So I know a guy if you're interested. But I'm sure the Black Veil guys are a little bit better than I am. So you I guess, did you go to school or did you just immerse yourself in a music community to, I guess, be your gateway drug into making this a career? Like, what was the tipping point for you?
Oh, well, that's an interesting story.
Well, right now you've got about 6 or 7 minutes, but if it's a long story, we can continue it to the next segment.
I can give you the Cliff Notes version.
Okay.
I went to college for finance.
Okay.
I grew up in the punk and hardcore.
Well, you said you had a bunch of friends in finance, so
yeah,
that makes
so
sense.
So I grew up in the punk and hardcore scenes and this and that, but as I became an adult, I realized I like money.
Like SLC punk style?
Kind of. I realized I like making money just as much as I like cool music, so I went to banking. Through banking, I met a lot of influential people that, you know, eventually went into entertainment. One of them being, you know, somebody that would start a management company who's now my boss.
The one I mentioned, Blasco?
Yes.
Look at that. The one-named guy, the Madonna of metal.
Yes. So I met him while he was managing a local hardcore band. When his company was just starting out, but
can you name drop them? What band?
Oh, they're called Fight Everyone. But
I've never heard of them, but that's a really brutal title.
Yeah. So I was in banking, and I learned all these fantastic skills.
What facet of banking? Like, because for a lot of people listening, I mean, that's like saying working in marketing. Like, were you a teller? Were you actually money?
I started out as a teller, and I eventually went got promoted up the ranks and became a branch manager. And then I took my Series 6 in California Life and Health and became a certified, like, financial advisor.
Oh, cool.
Managing financial portfolios for clients between the $500,000 and $1 million.
Could you wear what you're wearing right now to work?
No. Well, I was working at Wells Fargo at the time. They would not be stoked on that.
I mean, I'm insured. The best part of this Adobe job is I come in pajama pants. Anyway, continue.
So around 2008, we had the financial collapse. And, you know, banking just wasn't.
Thanks, Obama. Sorry.
Banking was kind of falling apart. You know, people were getting laid off. Branches were closing. It was a very difficult time. So I split. And I realized, you know, I have some money saved up in my bank account. Let's see what else is out there. I just happened to reconnect with Blasco through a Craigslist ad.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Through a Craigslist ad.
Which never happens now for music jobs that you want.
Well, this was 2008.
Oh, so. My God. So it was in the misconnection section or like?
I don't even remember.
Fish and I met on Craigslist, but we weren't sure about it. Like, we were on a train.
Yeah, so I just remember the headline read, Punk Rock Management Company.
What?
Yes. Needing somebody for day-to-day assistance.
Dude, I wish I saw that.
Yeah. So, you know, immediately I email them and, I put in my dorky story of, like, punk rock is my
home. Does your resume for Punk Rock Management have, like, safety pins in it? Or, like, do you have different fonts?
No. Mine was super corporate. I was like, oh, this guy's going to think I'm a total poser. But, if I could sell bank accounts and, you know, mutual funds, I got to be able to sell a music CD, right? Right?
A compact disc.
Yeah.
I could do that.
Yeah, so I answer the email, and he calls me in for an interview. And I remember this very vividly, and I think he does too. I ask, do I need to wear a suit to the interview? And his response is, fuck no, this is punk rock, be yourself.
Wow.
So in a
job thread email, yes. Fuck no.
Yes. Wow. So I show up wearing
No one ever tells anyone to be themselves in job interviews. Yeah, they say be better than yourself. That's awesome.
Yeah, so I show up in an Addicts t-shirt and like some baggy Dickies.
Nice.
Whatever. I get hired on the spot. And he tells
you didn't even open your mouth. They just looked at your outfit and they just hired you.
He's like, "All right, that's the dude."
Yeah.
So the first band I started working with was The Casualties.
Now that's punk.
Yes.
I believe they're on It's Not Dead Fest.
Fuck yeah, they are.
Yeah.
I still love that.
Jorge, band. Right?
George.
Oh, sorry. I thought it was Jorge for some reason.
That's how it's spelled, but we had
No, I thought that George. That, well, I'm an idiot. They played Warped Tour when my band, The City Drive, played Warped Tour in 2006. They were main stage.
Yes.
That's crazy. And it was like, The Casualties, up next, Paramore. Anyway.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
So I started out just writing social media for them. And
well, you do work in digital.
Yes. And back then, social media meant answering MySpace messages and putting up bulletins.
Yep.
But, you know.
Top eight.
Over the years, you kind of rise through the ranks and you come up with your own ideas. And I was eventually able to come up with enough money-making ideas to carve out a salary for myself and turn management into a full-time job.
How many people? Was it called Mercenary at the time?
Yeah, it was called Mercenary. It was just the two founders, Blasco and this guy named John Fenton, who manages Goat Whore,
mm-hmm.
and I was like the first actual employee.
High five. Good for you, man. And now Mercenary is big time.
Yeah.
It's pretty sweet. I mean, it's awesome that a Craigslist ad. I'm sorry. Yes. I've heard lots of stories on how people break in, but I guess I do try to make this informative and educational, and this is definitely that, especially the Offspring talk. But, and we're going to cut this off in a second and get back to it, but you really never know where you're going to find an opportunity. So, especially right now with the internet, you could find a job in the Defend Pop Punk group. You really can. So, always look. So, stick around. We're going to have Dan back on the show after these commercials. We are back with Waldman's Words with Dan Suriff. So, we started talking about the gateway drug into making this a career. I want to hear as much as possible in this 20-minute period about Mercenary, about the evolution. I believe, do you still work with The Casualties?
No, we parted ways a few years ago.
I heard that, didn't you guys kind of really streamline your roster? Like, you had way more until, like, about a year or two ago.
Yes.
Look, research.
That's a digging deep. But, yes, we did
have... I have to.
We had a pretty large roster, you know, with a lot of different bands spanning, you know, metal, punk rock, psychobilly. A lot of cool stuff. But we were acquired by some enormous... multinational entertainment conglomerate called the Rocka Group, and that was a very big deal. So when that happened, you know, we had to really take inventory of what, how we're spending our time, what kind of income it's generating, and really make the best business decision. So when a lot of these contracts were up, we just decided it was best to not renew it.
I get it. No, it's really hard.
Right. You know, at the end of the day, we have employees that we need to pay, we have business needs that we need to accomplish, and now we need to satisfy the shareholders. And, you know, we figured focusing on our strengths and our biggest bands was going to be the best move for everyone.
Well, as a fellow manager, I'm not sure. A lot of people who listen to the show are younger, and they're not sure what they want to do with their lives, and maybe they're listening because they want to do management, or they want to work in publicity, or they want to work in whomever. But a manager typically does not charge a retainer. A manager charges a percentage of their income, so 15, 20%, what have you. And we don't bill for every phone call or email we make. We don't. And there are days where I am maybe 9 to 10 back-to-back phone calls with several people, and it's just like, it might not turn into anything, and it's a lot of time, and people just don't get it. And if you have a really, really large roster, large, you might spread yourself a little too thin. And so it's a tough decision, but I get it. So this got really, 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 really dark. So let's go. So yeah, so 9/11. So anyway, so Mercenary, who do you work with directly? I know that Andy Black is main stage Warp this year.
Correct.
Which, that's huge considering he has one record.
Yes.
So
he's also hosting the Alternative Press Music Awards.
Yes, he is.
And nominated for Song of the Year and Album of the Year.
Which just got announced yesterday, right? Yesterday is not yesterday when this airs, but yes, it's going to be air. Our episode airs on Tuesday. So exactly a week ago.
Yes.
Yes.
So, you know, we're very proud of him. And the Andy Black thing was just kind of like an experiment. Is, you know,
was it going to be called Andy Vale for a while?
So for the people that don't know, Andy Black is the solo project of Andy Biersack, singer of Black Veil Brides.
And if you don't know, what are you doing on Adobe? Yeah. Come on!
So, you know, Black Veil Brides is a hard rock metal band, and fans are used to them putting out songs in a certain style. You know, Andy grew up loving pop punk and synth.
I heard he loves AFI. Like, loves,
yes,
AFI.
Well,
you know Hunter's on this show.
Oh, sweet.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean,
in that seat.
Oh! Yeah, so, you know, Black Veil was taking 2 years off or so to write a new record and relax. And Andy just wanted to try.
Is it back with Feldman?
They're back with Feldman again. And so Andy was just like, hey, you know, let me put out some songs that are basically songs I could never do with BVB because they're pop.
No, I get it. Sometimes, well, like if Pennywise, if Jim Lindbergh put out a folk album, he could, but not under the name Pennywise.
Right. Although his project, The Black Pacific, was great. But
I didn't know about that. Yeah, and what's the point? Anyway, continue.
So, yeah, you know, we manage Andy and Black Veil Brides and kind of everything under their umbrella, any businesses, individual projects. And then the other big one is Zach Wilde and everything under the Zach Wilde umbrella.
Rockstar, dude.
Yeah. His
No, the movie.
Yeah. Well, that was before my time. But, yes, it's great seeing him on TV with Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah.
He was also on American Idol.
He was?
Yes.
And he also played with this guy, Ozzy.
Yeah.
So that I don't know if a lot of people know that.
Yeah, he's that dude from the reality show on MTV.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. Making the band, right?
Oh, right. No, you know what? I just saw an old video. Zach was also on Road to Ozfest.
Really?
Yes. He flipped out on some guy for putting on his tour manager's vest. Dude, it sounds kind of strange, but very intimidating, dude.
No. His arms look bigger than me.
Oh, yes.
He's in good shape. And I bet his fingers are super strong. So
yeah, not bad for a dude in his 50s.
He's in his 50s? Yeah. I thought he was like 31 forever. Wow, but he shreds, and he's quite a brand.
Oh, absolutely.
It's insane. Good for him. I mean, it's hard enough to have one album that does well, but that dude, wow. So Black Veil Brides, they have some fierce fans.
That they do.
Do you deal with that personally? Because I can only imagine, like, I bet you get stalked by some of them. Like, let alone the guys in the band, let alone, like, their guitar techs. Like, they're that kind of band where people dig deep.
Yes, you know, they do have a very rabid fan base.
That's a good word.
Yes. They're called the BVB Army. Uh-huh. They're fantastic. Whenever we need something, we know we can rely on them to vote, and do
and defend.
Absolutely. And but that's also a little bit by design. If I can go into a little bit of behind-the-scenes things.
No, we want that.
Yes. Blasco and I knew early on that Black Veil Brides was going to be a very polarizing band. You know,
because they're pretty, yet they rock hard.
Right. And websites like Metal Sucks was calling them the ass or the shit stain on the ass of the universe.
That's so sweet.
So we're like, okay, this band is getting millions of YouTube views, but they're the shit stain
for their Standby record.
Oh, this is before Standby.
Okay.
This was unsigned, just Andy singing Knives and Pens.
Okay.
But we knew they were going to be a very polarizing band. So we said, okay, you know, we need to create like an us versus them mentality. We need to get these Black Veil fans so involved in this band that they're just going to go out and do the PR work for us. We're not going to need a publicist. We don't need magazines. These fans are going to do all the work. And that's what we did. And we kind of cultivated that obsession over the years. And they gave themselves the name BVB Army, which they absolutely are.
Are there people with BVB Army tattoos?
Yes, there is.
What?
We have a few thousand of those photos uploaded to the Black Veil Brides Facebook page.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
I just want to reiterate, that's not a Black Veil Brides tattoo. That's a Black Veil Brides fan club tattoo. That's intense. I mean, and I'm not saying anything negative about it. That's a community.
But where do you draw the line between the band logo tattoo and the fan club? As the way we see it is, a tattoo is advertisement for life.
Free.
That is the most committed thing you can do to show your support for that artist.
You take off t-shirts, you don't take off your tattoo.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so with the fans,
like the signatures from significant others on necks, that's a tattoo that I always think that's a good idea. So continue.
So the fans have been a blessing. They're amazing. You know, you occasionally get like the one or two very strange situations that are a little uncool, but for the most part, the overwhelming vast majority of them are awesome. I interact with them daily. We have a Facebook group with like 80,000 members, and the band,
wow.
Yeah, you know, the band members are in there. We're all talking to the fans and, you know, making it like a real community. If you want to go that far out of your way to subscribe to a Facebook group, then you should be talking with the band. You should have access to hidden information, or if you want to join a fan club.
Mystery is dead now. I know that they probably want to bring it back a little bit. I'm sure they do. You smile. But, I mean, the mystique of the rock star in 2017 with Twitter and Instagram and Facebook is just different world.
Right. You know what? I agree. But thinking back, like, how awesome would it have been if we were able to go into, like, an AOL chat room and talk with Mike Ness?
Oh, my God. Well, we cut out. Sorry. Are we good?
Yeah.
Hello? Continue. Mike Ness. Yeah, he's in this little band called Social Distortion.
So, you know, if we had that kind of access, even if it was just a quick little question, mm-hmm. That would have meant the world to me as a teenager. And I think we're just having the same effect with these young kids. And, you know, the kids now have it so much harder than we did.
In what way?
Well, let's talk about social media and cyberbullying.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you for us, we did something embarrassing. Yeah, you know, people would make fun of us for a couple months, and then somebody else would do a dumbass thing, and it would be forgotten about.
There can be a video that circulates now.
Yeah. Now it lives on the internet forever. It could come back decades later to haunt you.
You know, I was actually talking to someone about this. When you're applying for college now, they look at your Facebook, your Instagram, and your Twitter. Yeah,
they do that for job applications, too.
Which makes sense. But I'm just saying because, like, kids are different. Like, obviously, like, if you were hiring and you heard that a potential employee pulled his dick out, like, you probably wouldn't want that. But, I mean, just think about, like, teenagers, they're not applying for full-time jobs, you know? And so it's just, like, some kid gets really messed up at a party and some video circulates. Like, some college might be like, this is a liability. We don't want you. It's pretty wild.
Absolutely. And that's why it's so important that they're able to connect with these
in a positive way.
Yes. Connect with these musicians in a positive way because it's almost, dare I say, like therapeutic to them.
No. Don't even. It is therapeutic to them.
Because you know what? They have no other escape from reality. It's from the hardships that they face in school and in their personal lives. They just have this online community. And
their fans are typically a lot of people who are kind of maybe the bullied kid.
Correct.
So
you know, they're able to go into this community and just, you know, even a like from the guitarist or whatever.
That'll make their year.
Exactly.
Right. He retweeted me. He retweeted me. Like, that's a big deal. I mean, granted, if, like, Bret Hitman Hart retweeted me, I'd be pretty stoked right now.
Exactly. So it's no different. They look up to these musicians, and it's fantastic that these guys are able to take the time out of their day to go and interact with the people that made their careers, that made it all possible.
Right.
Because, you know, without the fans, none of us would have a job.
No one comes to the shows.
Yeah.
No, anyone who says, oh, people say that, no, it's true. If people don't come, if people don't buy the records, the band is literally just another guy playing on the subway.
Yep.
And obviously, when you're riding the subway in New York, I know that you're not from New York, but I've seen people that are way better than every single band I ever listened to, and they might not have a home. So it's pretty crazy. These fans are everything, and bands like Black Veil Brides, who are genuinely good to them, that's why they're where they are. Obviously, the songs help too. But that really helps. So I guess this may be a good transition to advice.
Oh.
So you are an artist manager. You are the vice president of artist management and digital strategy at Mercenary. What advice would you give for a band or someone who's trying to break out into the industry so that they can make it a career?
Okay. Well, I would think for the band, I would give the most basic advice. And you hear this all the time, but it's absolutely true. Make the best possible song you can. Don't put out an album. Don't put out an EP. It could just be a single. Focus on making that one hit track the same way Black Veil Brides or Andy Biersack focused on making Knives and Pens.
Which has like 80 billion views right now.
Yeah, I think we're at like 300 million combined, something like that.
Holy cow.
But because ultimately, it's easier to create one really amazing song than 12 songs. And, you know, you want that one amazing hit track versus 12 mediocre, forgettable songs.
Especially in a playlist and singles culture.
Exactly, because right now, Spotify playlists are everything.
It's nuts.
Yeah. So focus on that one song. Be the best you can possibly be. Worry about the other songs later.
Before you introduce yourself to the world kind of thing. Like, correct. Like, don't come out the gates with a triple album.
Correct. But that's a common mistake we see bands making. So that would be my best advice to an up-and-coming
on the performance
band.
End.
Yes.
So what about the business end?
Ooh.
I know I'm asking really hard-hitting questions.
Well, every band.
What's your favorite track on Ixnay the Hombre?
Okay.
Mota. Anyway.
Oh, yes. No, you know what? On the business end, I think bands just rush into making it a career too soon. You don't need a manager right out the gate. You don't need a high-end publicist. You don't need a booking agent. You don't need a record label.
So this is similar advice.
Yeah. And, you know, people say it all the time, but
well, bands are impatient. Everyone wants success without the effort.
Right. And people look at a band like Black Veil Brides and think, oh, they blew up overnight. No, they didn't. Andy was playing garage shows by himself and, like, talent shows and stuff for 7 years.
Ohio, right?
Yeah. Before anybody took notice, he alone was, you know, selling maybe 400, 500 tickets for headlining shows by the time he was 16.
That's huge.
Correct, but I'm saying it came over time.
No, obviously he didn't do it on day two.
Right, people just remember him headlining the Whiskey or Black Veil Brides headlining the Whiskey.
Or they co-headlining the AP tour with Drugs.
Right.
Ooh.
But, you know, they don't think, oh, you know, he was 12 years old playing to nobody in his school auditorium.
Right.
And that's where careers are made. Like, you got to pay your dues. You got to tough it out. And that's where he fine-tuned his performance and how he was able to interact with the audience. And up-and-coming bands right now kind of just want to skip that. And I don't want, I'm painting with broad strokes here, but...
Bob Ross.
But, you know, they need to take a little bit of time and really pay attention to the details and, again, be the best possible performers they could be.
Mm-hmm. You know, what they said on American Idol a lot to people, like, I think Tori Kelly, who's a top 10 Billboard chart and she didn't make Idol, it's like, you're not ready yet.
But, yeah, and you know what? Sorry, to go back to...
You don't need to apologize.
Needing that support staff, you don't need them right away.
No.
Like, when you're ready, when you've got that hit song, when you've got something that's worthy, that's cool...
They'll come to you.
They'll come to you.
I get it. I mean, obviously, sometimes connections forge relationships, but you got to show a manager or anyone who wants to be a label that you're a brand yourself. Because they want to see proven track record before they invest. Because especially in this climate where less and less people every day are buying music, they need to make sure that you're it.
Yep.
So, all right, well, we're going to close this out with Offspring talk. So I would say that Conspiracy of One, and I'm glad you agree with me on this, is their most underrated album. And it's definitely my favorite. And I'm tossing between Smash and Ixnay being my second favorite. What is your stance on abortion? No, what is how do you feel about my list, and what would you say is yours?
Well, I would think that my favorite Offspring album depends on my mood.
Okay.
I'm a fan of all their albums.
What if your mood is always awesome?
Well, look, I would say I definitely agree that Conspiracy of One, it's criminally underrated. You know, they were coming off of Americana, which had so many huge, massive hits.
Crossover hits, too.
Yes. And Conspiracy of One had a lot of hits, too, but they were mainly for, like, the hardcore fans. There was a lot of punkish songs. Just the title,
Come Out Swinging.
Yeah. The title track itself, Conspiracy of One, it's phenomenal. And back when people used to buy albums, we would go and look into the art sheet. And
the liner notes.
Yeah, and look at all the awesome art that they had. And Offspring's always been really good about it. They had Frank Kozak do so much of the art. Like, I think he did the entire Americana album.
I think Brian Wilson also opens Conspiracy of One with We're Ready to Sing.
Yes.
Which is pretty rad.
Yeah, so, you know, it's very cool. And then, you know, they had Splinter, which had some of my favorite songs. Very short album, but...
They still play Can't Get My Head Around You Live every single show I've seen them at.
Oh, that's a great song.
That's a great song. Yeah. It's so short. It's like 220 or something.
The Noose is one of my favorite Offspring songs ever. And I'm
Settle My Smash and Ixnay. What's objectively better every time?
Smash.
Okay, I agree.
although I like the Ixnay on the ombre. Look, I hate going into aesthetics.
You mean image wise, like,
yes,
the dreads?
I hated that. Like,
he cut it off right after, I think, Come Out and Play. Yeah. I think he cut it off. He never grew him back.
Yeah, you know what? Long hair was not cool.
Long hair, don't care.
Long hair is not punk rock.
Well, that's what a lot of people said. So anyway, we're closing out. Dan, last fist pound. Thank you so much for coming by. This has been a lot of fun. I hope that you guys enjoy this. I hope the BVB Army really enjoys this.
I hope so, too.
I mean, you're gonna blast this to them, so that's going to be awesome. The next few weeks are coming up with some other people. Blake Cordero, manager for the band Nominee, working at Catalyst Publicity Group and So What Music Festival. Morgan Carney at Rockatown, manager for Woven Hiatus, Forever at Last. J.D. Perry and Sean Dorsey at No Hope Records in Philadelphia. Gino's and Pat's make really good cheesesteak. And we've got Chris Bianchi, who I can tell you, he also works for Mercenary. So thank you all for listening. Keep tuning in every Tuesday night, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Dan, you kick ass. Have a good day.